Good afternoon and welcome to Downstairs Care Out There blog podcast. My name is Mitchell Thomas. Here we are again for another session. Today I'm going to talk to you about budget training. That is training when you have a limited budget, or as in my experience, absolutely zero budget, and how to make the most out of what you have. We're going to start with the basics and then move up from there. So obviously the first point in our budget training is obviously don't waste anything. If a medication or a bit of equipment goes out of date or becomes unserviceable, you can't use it on a patient, obviously hang on to that for your training stores. This is things like slings, SAM splints. I know sometimes they get damaged, punctured and crushed. You can still use them. They're still good for training purposes. Roller bandages, if they get soiled or dirty, obviously not with contaminants, but just out of part of being in the field, we used to wreck a lot of bandages in our kits, so we used to roll them over into training stores so we could crack some unbroken material and get people used to the experience of breaking through packaging to get to things. That's really important, is getting people to break through the packaging, use the items how they would actually use them. It's all well and good to place a splint down next to someone and say, yep, that leg is splinted, but what we used to emphasize was really getting that process happening and giving people an appreciation for how long that actually took. Instead of just saying that they would gain IV access, we'd have either a cannula trainer there, or our budget cannula trainer, which was an idea that we all came up with, to use some tubing, foam, other bits and pieces to make ourselves a semi-realistic cannula trainer that gave people an appreciation for how long the process actually took in reality. One thing we were also really lucky to have access to 24/7 was our vehicles. So we could throw all our equipment in the back, throw either a fake patient in the form of myself or one of my colleagues moaning and complaining, or we could throw our CPR dummy in the back and have people work that way. The training equipment we initially had access to when I was in defence running out of a small base was a couple of CPR training dummies, a neonate CPR trainer, a fairly used and abused cannulation arm that consisted of two pads that were thoroughly wrecked by the time I got to them, and a full set of moulage kit, which came in very handy for a number of exercises that we ran. I would say by far the thing that got the most use was the moulage kit, as well as a number of bits and pieces that we did to make it more realistic and interesting for the people we were running through drills with. This included things like using padded bits of wood that we'd broken to simulate fractures, filling a saline bag with a mixture of tomato sauce and cooking oil to make something that sort of resembled blood when it shot out across the room. The cannula trainer, I have detailed instructions for up on the website, but that was quite interesting. Made of cardboard, so you could easily get a piece of PVC pipe, tape the cannula trainer to that, affix it to your arm, and allow people to have a semi-realistic experience of cannulating that way. Yeah, myself and my willing volunteers often used to put ourselves on the line, and often our clothing, the oil and tomato sauce mixer, did not go favourably in the wash, tended to stain whatever it touched, so watch out for that one. We used to find a lot of value in simulating an environment. We'd take people out and practice treating in the bush, practice coming upon casualties, practice our tactical combat casualty care, that is, care of a casualty during and after a firefight. Another thing we used to do is focus on people getting to know their equipment, knowing where things were, by making them treat inside dark rooms, under red light, under blue light, all sorts of situations like that. There was actually a situation that inspired the treating under red light scenario. I was called out at about 12 o'clock at night after a nighttime assault. Shortly after they'd finished up the attack, one of the students had managed to get a stick lodged in his eye, the opposite eye to what he was wearing his night vision equipment on. My driver and I responded via Land Rover. It took us about 5 minutes to find the section and get on scene. I was met by a casualty who was walking. He climbed into the back of the ambulance and we got a good look at what we were actually dealing with. He still had a stick embedded in his eye. I instructed my driver to start driving towards the range gate, where we would meet and liaise with civilian ambulance to pass this guy on and get him to the right treatment. At some point during the course of the drive, our front headlights became inoperable. My driver was forced to drive rather slowly, and with a torch that we'd managed to fish out of one of our pockets. Unfortunately, that meant that in the back of the Land Rover, I was unable to use my headlamp, as it washed out the front cabin and made him completely unable to see the road. So I had a good long distance of about 45 minutes to an hour where I was treating this patient with an object embedded in his eye in the back of a Land Rover while under red light, which made me think that that was probably something I needed to teach other people how to do and get other people thinking about. I couldn't stress enough to anyone that I came by that knowing where each object you needed in your equipment was vital. Whether it be day or night, you need to be able to know, based on an approximate location in the bag, what you're reaching for. I used to pack all my bags identically, so I knew that when I reached to a certain location, I could be pretty certain I was going to grab what I wanted. Another trick that we used to have was attaching bits of glow tape to Velcro, and that would allow you to label each pocket and its contents so that once you moved the light off it, you were still able to know what you were grabbing at, and you were able to instruct other people what to grab. And that came in quite handy. At a lot of our scenes, you wouldn't have many medically trained people, but you'd have a lot of bystanders that were quite willing to help, which is always good because it means I never did any carrying or lifting or anything like that. It was basically just my job to direct and orchestrate the delivery of the patient to my vehicle. By far the hardest part we found in our facilitation of the learning activities was that as a role player, you had to really stay in character. Sometimes it's quite difficult, especially when you want to give feedback immediately, but you really need to learn to just stay in character as a patient and let that feedback come out in the debrief. If you stop someone or if you interrupt with something that the patient wouldn't do normally, then you really put people off their game and it doesn't help their learning. All it does is fluster them, put them out of place, and mean that they have to start from the top again and do what they were doing really unnecessarily sometimes. And you've just got to remember that even though you're coming into it with your biases and your knowledge, that this is the other person's chance to show you how they run a patient encounter. If you want to deliver feedback, if you want to debrief that individual, that's your opportunity later as the patient. You often have the best view of what's going on. Sometimes as an assessor, you're on the outside looking in, but the patient actually knows what's happening to them. Sometimes when we were running a simulation, it wouldn't even be about the patient care. We'd have a patient care aspect to the scenario, but it'd be more about moving that patient from point A to point B, learning to treat a patient in the back of the ambulance with all the limitations that imposes, as opposed to treating them where you have 360 degree access, and learning when maybe you would think about staying for a few minutes using that 360 degrees of access to the patient before you head off in the direction of hospital. I don't think we ever felt the limitations of our equipment hindered the delivery of any of our training or hindered what we were trying to achieve. We just had to be better trainers and figure out how to use that equipment to its best advantage. Often we'd have to put up our hand to play patient while another one of our colleagues directed the simulation. Because we didn't have high fidelity equipment, we'd often rely on environmental issues or access issues to the patient, all of which are as much of a consideration in the pre-hospital environment as the actual delivery of patient care. You can deliver all the care to a patient you want, but if you can't access or egress that patient, then you're just going to be stuck delivering care in location for an extended time. The way we planned our training was basically around the old motto, improvise, adapt, overcome. We didn't have much of anything, so we had to make do with what we had. We had to adapt the equipment we had, and in spite of our lack of equipment, we had to deliver effective training to our trainees and junior members. I think being a trainer is an incredibly rewarding experience, delivering training to people and then hearing how they come out of that experience. A lot of people have relayed positive messages to me on the value of the training they received from us. I got an email the other day from a fellow that I trained to cannulate using a bit of cardboard and some IV tubing, which became colloquially known as the El Cheapo Cannula Trainer. And through practicing on that, he was able to get the technique to the point where he now successfully gets more cannulas than he misses. And hearing that that technique helped him was a great win for me. I'm very, very happy with that. So if you're out there listening to this and you do ever get the opportunity to train someone, I highly suggest you take it up. if you can do a good job of training and give some positive training and reinforcement to that individual, seeing them perform successfully is possibly the greatest feeling you can ever have. And if you can produce a trainee that says quality things about you and encourages people to ask you to train them as well, that speaks values to you. That means you really know what you're saying, you really know what you're doing, and you can articulate that very well and put it out there for people so that they can understand it. Because of our lack of access to most training equipment, we used to push every opportunity we could get. If someone was going to let us into the skills lab at a local hospital, or if the local health company was running one of their recertification nights, we'd jump in on that, either helping out, getting involved, or actually doing the being participants in the night ourselves. When we went on to other army bases, we'd often go make contact with the local health group or hospital there. Now that it's all civilian run, most of the people were fairly nice to deal with, and we were able to get access to a lot of training stores that we may not have otherwise had. We were able to ask if we could borrow their sim room, steal their mannequin and have a play with it and bring it back unharmed, and most people were fairly accommodating to this. So the motto of that is really just beg, borrow and steal. If anyone's willing to give you something or let you do something, take full advantage of that, but be polite when you do it. I think that's a fairly good rule for all of life. One of the key points we used to basically live by when we were coming up with ideas for our training and how to get past what we didn't have was improvise, adapt, overcome. If we didn't have a piece of equipment or we didn't have a way to simulate a particular condition, we would sit down, have a think about it, and we basically just MacGyver the hell out of anything that we needed to. I was lucky enough to work with a fairly smart team of people that could do that really well. So the key points of this talk have really been, if you don't have it and make do. If you're playing a casualty, stay in character. It really does a lot for the learner. And just because you don't have the equipment to do world-class quality sim man training doesn't mean you can't train. This has been another short podcast for the Downstairs Care Out There blog podcast. Hopefully, I'm planning to get back to speaking to some guests soon and hearing the interesting things they have to say. I've just been a little busy at work at the moment. For those of you who don't know, I've now finished my trainee year and I'm now a qualified paramedic with my service. So I've finally hit that plateau in my training and it's time to aim for the next peak. Back in the military, we always used to think as being qualified as the minimum standard and everything that you did from there was a step up. I'm taking the same attitude to my development and training as a paramedic. So to everyone out there, good evening, good afternoon, or good night, depending on what time zone you're in or when you're listening to this. This has been Mitchell Thomas.